This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story.
Welcome to Favorite Story, especially produced and transcribed in Hollywood for the Dayton Power and Light Company. Each Tuesday at this time, you're cordially invited to enjoy stories by the world's master storytellers. Now, some of these stories you've read and loved many times before. Now, others may be new discoveries for you, new adventures in great literature. George Bernard Shaw, the sharp-tongued, keen-witted Irish playwright, is the author of tonight's favorite story, Cashel Byron's Profession. Stage and screen star Henry Fonda, who will be heard on the world premiere of the new Electric Theater this Sunday, October 3rd at 9 p.m. over WHIO, selected this play for you. And now, here is your host for Favorite Story, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
In his first 9 years as a professional writer, George Bernard Shaw made a total of £6, which is a trifle less than $30. Since that time, Mr. Shaw has been somewhat more successful, making himself more than a million from such plays as Pygmalion, St. Joan, Caesar and Cleopatra. His sharp beard, his sharper tongue, and his portable typewriter, which is the sharpest of the three, have been needling playgoers for the better part of a century. Our favorite story this week is a fine example of Bernard Shaw's skill with the needle. It's Cashel Byron's Profession. And, as nearly as we can tell, this is its first radio production. Mr. Henry Fonda asked us to produce Cashel Byron as his favorite story. To play the title role in Mr. Shaw's adventure, we have called an actor from the playwright's hometown of Dublin, Ireland, Dan O'Herlihy, of the Abbey Theatre, who came to this country not long ago to play Macduff in Orson Welles' film production of Macbeth. Now, Mr. O'Herlihy takes the hurdle from Shakespeare to Shaw and appears as Cashel Byron.
Name, Cashel Byron. Profession? Well, they've got a lot of names for the sort of work I do. There's good money in it, and you get your name in the newspapers. Of course, a lot of people don't approve of it. My mother's one of them. She's still wondering how her dimpled-cheeked darling got into such a profession. Well, maybe there's an explanation. Let's have a look at me in my sapling days. Cashel Byron, age 17. The place, Moncrief House. A scholastic establishment for the sons of British gentlemen. A woman elegantly dressed is having a discussion with the headmaster about her son. Her son, Cashel Byron.
Oh, I'm very disappointed, Dr. Moncrief, at the report you've given me.
You must understand, dear lady, that the boy is 17 years of age. It is time he was thinking of a profession.
What profession would you advise for him? You know so much better than I.
That would depend to some extent on his own taste, madam.
Oh, not at all. What does he know about the world, poor boy? His own taste is sure to be something ridiculous. Very likely he'd want to go on the stage like me.
Oh? Then you would not encourage any tendency of that sort?
Most decidedly not. I hope he has no such idea.
None of which I am aware.
Dr. Moncrief, take the boy in hand and make him study. Take him over your knee if necessary.
The fact is, your son can hardly be dealt with as a child any longer, madam. He has developed physically to quite a degree. I must tell you that he considers himself somewhat of an athlete.
An athlete?
Now, within due bounds, I do not discourage bodily exercises. They are a recognized part of our system. But Cashel has, shall I say, unusual strength and dexterity. The other boys tell me he enjoys fighting.
Fighting?
And I may say quite frankly, madam, that several of my masters are quite terrified by the boy.
Oh, ridiculous. Cashel is an infant.
How long has it been, madam, since you've seen your son?
2 years. I've been on a theatrical tour. You understand these things, Dr. Moncrief.
I think you'll be surprised when you see your infant, Mrs. Byron. Shall I call him?
Please, do.
Hibbs. I say, sir, Hibbs.
Yes, Mr. Muncrief?
Tell him his mother's here.
Yes, sir.
Tasha!
Oh.
Tasha Byron! Mama's here!
Oh, dear.
Come in, Byron.
Good heavens! Is that you, Cashel?
I will leave you with your mother, Byron.
How do you do, Cashel?
Very well. Thanks.
You have grown, Cashel. And I'm afraid you're very awkward. I don't know what to do with you. Dr. Moncrief tells me that you are quite rough.
I am not. It's because
there is no use in contradicting me in that fashion. I am sure that whatever Dr. Moncrief says is perfectly true.
He's always talking like that. I can't learn Latin and Greek, and I don't see what good they are.
We are not talking about Latin and Greek, Cashel. I will not allow any fighting.
Ah, you don't know anything about it.
Oh, dear, you're beginning to speak coarsely, Cashel. After all the pains I took with your enunciation when you first began to talk.
I speak the same as other people. I don't see the use of being so jolly particular over every syllable.
Oh, dear.
I used to have to stand no end of chaff about my way of speaking. The fellows here know all about you, of course.
All about me?
About your being on the stage. You complain of my fighting. I should have had a precious bad time of it if I didn't lick the chaff out of some of them.
Cashel, I came down here on your behalf. But this interview is most unpleasant. I have just paid your school tuition of 2 more years.
2 more years? I won't stay here.
Nonsense. Now you may kiss me goodbye, Cashel, and return to your studies.
No.
What do you mean?
I don't care to kiss you.
Your manners are quite bad. You may leave now, Cashel. Please call Dr. Moncrief. I wish to speak to him about increasing your discipline. Aren't you going to say goodbye, Cashel? Cashel!
How much did your mother give you, Cashel?
Not to hate me.
Oh, I said that was beastly mean.
She's as mean as can be. It's all Monkey's fault. He's been cramming her full of lies about me. But she's as bad as he is. I tell you, I hate my mother.
Oh, come, that's a little strong, old chap.
If she thinks I'm going to stick here for the next 2 years, she's jolly well mistaken. I mean to bolt.
Run away from school? What a laugh.
There's only one thing I'd like to do before I leave. I wish I could get old Dr. Monkey Moncrief in a boxing ring. How I'd like to get him against the ropes. Cashel Byron, age 17, ran off from school and knocked out a professor of geometry on the way. A neat geometric punch it was, too. Cashel Byron, age 18, shipped as an ordinary seaman and stayed alive by building biceps and using fists. Cashel Byron, age 19, found himself in the city of Melbourne, Australia, earning his keep sweeping out to gymnasium. And it was there he met the man named Mellish.
Hey, boy.
You talking to me?
Put down that broom for a second.
What's on your mind?
Hey, try punching this bag once. I'd like to put that arm of yours to more use than shoving a broom handle.
Certainly. You want me to hit it hard?
Yes, yes. Hard as you can now.
Righto. You think I can punch?
Oh, lad, I've been looking for you for 20 years. My name's Mellish. Once I had the champion of the world. I'm a trainer and manager and builder of champions. Ah, but since old Ned passed on, I haven't found me the stuff of another champion. How would you like to be it?
Be what?
Why, champion of the world.
You mean make boxing my profession?
Well, I never heard it called a profession before, but the way you hit, Sonny, call it anything you want to.
So Cashel Byron, instructed by the man named Mellish, hit punching bags and other pugilists.
Oh!
And much to his own surprise, at the age of 22,
a winner and new champion, Cashel Byron!
Well, Cash, my boy, you've cleaned up every fighting man east and west of the Hebrides. Now it's time we went home.
Home? I don't have a home.
To England, man.
I don't want to go.
What? Oh, but Cash, I've already scheduled a match. We have our passage and the most delightful country home in Great Britain where we can train for it.
I won't go.
What? Well, you've got to go, Cash. You're in the boxing business. Oh, beg pardon. Profession. You're caught up in it. You've got to go where the bouts call you, lad. We're off for England, Cash, me boy.
It's not a bad place, Mellish. Who owns this estate?
A woman, they tell me. Name of Lydia Carew. The coldest woman who ever lived, I'm told. A woman with ice in her veins. But not only the coldest, the richest.
Oh.
She lives in the big house on the hill. Let's make sure we always take our runs in the other direction. Me, I wouldn't want to bump into her.
That's all right with me.
Well, now I'll pop in and get you a warm shirt. And then we'll go for a run. It's getting a little cold for you to be out in just boxing shorts. Now, don't wander off now.
Don't worry. Oh, who's that?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I was walking in the woods and I'm afraid I got lost. I'll leave at once.
No, please don't go.
When I first saw you standing there in the sunshine, I thought you were a statue.
Oh, forgive my attire. Or rather, lack of it. You see, I'm quite alive.
Yes. No, I must
leave. I must say that as you emerged from the trees, I thought you were a forest goddess. You are genuine and alive, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, please, before you go, tell me what your name is.
I...
Permit me to introduce myself. My name is Cashel Byron.
Oh, yes. You're here for your health.
Oh, that's what they've told you.
Yes.
Good. And your name?
Lydia Carew.
Ah.
Good day to you, Mr. Cashel Byron.
Good day, Miss Lydia Carew.
Well, here's your shirt, Cash. Let's go for our run.
Yes.
Well, what's the matter with you? What are you staring at?
Huh? Oh, nothing.
Have you seen a ghost?
No. The loveliest creature in the whole world.
Hmm?
I never believed a woman could be so lovely. Mellish, don't let it out here that I'm a fighting man. I don't think she'd like it.
She? Who's she?
I've just met Miss Lydia Carew.
Lydia Carew?
Mellish, you've seen a lot of the world. Is it possible for a man to fall in love quite suddenly? In 15 seconds?
Oh, Cash, me boy. Let me tell you something. I ain't no fighters. I've been training them for 30 years. And there are three things that'll spoil any good boxer. A Charlie horse, a weak left jab, and a woman.
We continue with the trials and tribulations of one Cashel Byron, as described by the great Irish playwright Bernard Shaw. Well, when the prize fighter meets the lady, it's usually a freestyle battle, and more often than not, it's the lady who scores the knockout. At any rate, it appears that Miss Lydia Carew has Mr. Cashel Byron against the ropes, so to speak. So may the best man win, and he usually does, particularly if the best man happens to be a woman.
Miss Lydia!
Ah.
Forgive me for intruding in your garden. I had to see you again.
Pray sit down. I was just idling away the time, tossing pebbles into the pool. Watch. Look at the widening rings. Vibrations, the scientists call them. And they're the same, they say, as the twinkling of stars, or the pulsations of chords of music. I've been inquiring about you, Mr. Cashel Byron.
Oh, you have? What have you found?
They tell me you're a student.
Oh.
But I haven't been able to find out of what.
Science. I'm a student of science.
Physical or moral science?
Physical science. But there's more moral science in it than people would think.
I'm fascinated by science. I wish I could do experiments with my own hands. Putting master science thoroughly, I believe one must take one's gloves off. Is that your opinion?
Well, I think you can become a very good scientist by working with the gloves on.
I never should. Tell me, if I ever study science, will you give me some lessons?
Well, I'd rather you came to me than to another professor. Oh, I'm afraid I have to go. I ran off. I should be working out.
Working out? Oh, what a strange expression. Do you mean working outdoors in contrast to working indoors?
No, Miss Lydia, I'm always saying stupid things. I'm a blunt man, I'm afraid. I'll be blunt now. Miss Lydia, are you engaged for this evening?
I am, Mr. Byron. I'm attending Lady Hoskins' soiree.
May I see you there?
I have a companion, Mr. Lucien Weber.
Oh, I see. Forgive me for being stupid. If I were a gentleman instead of a poor devil of a professional pug, I'd know...
A pug?
Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Good day, Miss Lydia.
Mellish! Come in here!
What? What do you want, Cash, what are you doing dressing up like a stuffed owl?
Help me tie this blasted black tie and stop asking questions.
Well, you've got about to fight next week, young fellow. You can't go gallivanting around.
Be quiet.
Where the devil are you going?
I'm going to try to invade her sphere of life.
There what?
I'm going to a party, Mellish. To a soiree.
A what?
A soiree at Lady Hoskins.
You are you? Were you invited?
No, but I'm going anyway. To see if I can stay on my own 2 feet in their kind of ring. You can announce tonight's bout officially. The prize fighter meets the lady. No holds barred.
Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Abengaze of Vienna is going to address our soiree tonight on the subject of the striving and searching for culture among modern men.
Good evening, Miss Lydia.
Hi, Mr. Byron. What a surprise to see you here.
You seem to be alone.
My escort is the chairman, the gentleman introducing the speaker. Oh, listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Abengaze.
My friend, my recommendation to you in my role of an educator is to learn, to make yourself better and wiser from day to day. You must strive, you muststruggle to make yourself more clever. Strive for cleverness. My theory...
Just a minute, Professor.
I think you're so wrong.
It hurts. Just one moment, young man. Let me have my say, then I'll shut up. That's a pretty good recommendation, Professor, about learning. But nobody in this room is going to follow it. And the reason they won't learn is not because they don't want to be clever or that they're lazy. It's because they'd like people to think they know everything already. And as for all this striving and struggling, I don't hold with that at all. It's the worst way you could set about doing anything.
Really, sir? You've gone far enough.
Oh, I'm almost finished. I say nothing can be done properly if it's done with an effort. If a thing can't be done light and easy, steady and certain, it shouldn't be done at all. Sounds strange, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
But I'll tell you a stranger thing. The more effort you make, the less effect you produce. A violinist once told me that when he laid a tight hold on his fiddlestick, or even set his teeth hard together, he could do nothing but rasp.
How much more of this nonsense are we going to endure?
Oh, you think it's nonsense, do you? Take a look at this painting hanging on the wall. You see that fellow in armor? St. George and the Dragon, or whatever he is? He's jumped down from his horse to fight that other fellow. The lady in the gallery is half crazy with anxiety for St. George. And well, she might be. There's a posture for a man to fight in. His weight isn't resting in his legs. One touch of a child's finger would upset him. Look at his neck craned out in front of him. And his face, as flat as a full moon towards his man. As if he was inviting him to shut up both eyes with one blow. He doesn't know how to fight.
Now, really?
He's all strain and stretch. He isn't at his ease. He carries the weight of his body as foolishly as one of the ladies here would carry a heart of bricks. He doesn't understand the universal principle that ease and strength, effort and weakness go together. Well, Mr. Lucien Weber, you still think I'm talking nonsense?
I believe that your theories are manifestly absurd.
Then look at it this way. Suppose you, Mr. Lucien Weber, wanted to hit me the most punishing blow you possibly could. What did you do?
Why,
You'd probably make a great effort. And what had happened? You'd exhaust all your strength in one blow. Whereas if you took it easy, like this. There, it's just like pocketing a billiard ball.
What? What? Mr. Weber with his finger.
And what?
Are you all right? Oh, good. Get up.
Thank you.
Mr. Byron, I'm considering you a brute. I think you are a horrible man.
My apologies, Miss Lydia. I believe I've won my point, but lost my fight.
Lydia, I can't for the life of me understand why you made me bring you to this low place. A boxing match, really?
I simply had to find out what the man's profession was like.
Lydia, I'm surprised at you. I do believe you're infatuated with the fellow.
Don't be silly, Lucien. I consider him a brute.
Yeah.
Oh, Lucien, what is that? The enclosure with the ropes and posts.
That's the ring.
It's not a ring. It's a square.
They call it the ring. They've succeeded in squaring the circle. The fight might begin, Lydia. Are you certain you want to stay?
Oh, quite certain.
Very sorry, sir. I have orders not to admit you.
But I must see her.
I have strictest orders, Mr. Byron.
I have no intention of using violence, but you may force me.
Mr. Byron, Bashford, I don't want you to get hurt carrying out my orders.
Very well, miss. Will you be safe with him, ma'am?
Quite. You may leave, Bashford.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for seeing me.
It was not my wish.
Miss Lydia, I found out that you came to the fight.
Well, I did.
I had intended that you not ever know my profession. Now that you do, I stand before you, bare-souled and humble, asking that you consider me a man, not a monstrosity. A man who loves you, Miss Lydia.
You must not speak so.
With all my nerve and science, I'm really no better than a child at heart. I've always had a notion that an angel would turn up someday. And you have.
I am no angel.
I think the reason I love you, Miss Lydia, is that you're the only person that's not afraid of me.
Oh?
Other people are civil because they don't dare be otherwise to the cock of the ring. It's a lonely thing to be a champion.
It is also a lonely thing to be a very rich woman. People are afraid of my wealth and what they call my learning. We have at least one experience in common. And now, do me a great favor by going. We have nothing further to say.
Just tell me this. Suppose I were a rich swell.
I will suppose nothing. But what is?
But may I never see you again? Never at all. World without end, am I?
Never as the famous prize fighter.
Miss Lydia, I've given up fighting. I'll never fight again.
Mr. Byron, you would do this for me?
Yes, Miss Lydia. But I must be absolutely honest. For you, and because nobody will fight with me anymore, that's another disadvantage to excelling in this game. You put yourself out of business by scaring away the competition. I'm retiring of necessity and love.
Mr. Byron.
I intend to have one more fight.
What?
I'm going to knock you silly, Miss Lydia, and carry you to the altar.
Mr. Byron, since I saw you fight, I've been studying the jargon and vocabulary of your profession. Mr. Byron, I throw in the towel.
Cashel Byron, age 25, age 30, age 35. Retired champion of the world. Happily married, thank you. Profession? Fighter. Returned by a large majority to the House of Commons. Cashel Byron is known as the best fighting man in the British Parliament. Now, they don't have a rope around it, and the floor isn't made of canvas. But it's possible to score a knockout blow now and again. You see, there are other ways of punching in this life. But you've got to know the secret. Keep your balance and take it sweet and slow.
Favorite Story has brought you the sage advice of Mr. George Bernard Shaw, as expressed in his famous novel, Cashel Byron's Profession. Dan O'Hurley, he came all the way from Dublin's Abbey Theatre to Hollywood just to play Cashel Byron, and, of course, to make a few movies as well. Mr. Henry Fonda, also of the movies, chose this delightful Shaw comedy as his own particular favorite story.
Ronald Coleman will return shortly to tell you about next week's favorite story. Sometime today, perhaps, you switched on your vacuum cleaner, and you figuratively had the services of our entire organization there helping you clean your rugs. Yes, every time you flip a switch or press a button, electricity is there ready and waiting, because the men and women of our company have done such a good job in keeping your electric service constant and dependable. Now, these people are the employees of the Dayton Power and Light Company, one of America's business-managed, tax-paying, self-supporting gas and electric service companies. They take pride in their jobs. They're skilled and experienced people, and they are one of the reasons you can depend upon gas and electricity to be there whenever and wherever you want it, whatever the task. So, whenever you think of the Dayton Power and Light Company, think not only of turbines and generators, gas pipelines and meters. Think of these people. They are your friends and neighbors who live here in your own neighborhood, raise their children here, and pay their taxes here. They are the Dayton Power and Light Company. Under sound management, they work around the clock and around the calendar to keep up the values of your gas and electric service, to keep it one of the biggest bargains in your family budget. Now here again is your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
A governor of New Mexico wrote next week's favorite story, a novel of such smashing success that it made all previous bestsellers seem like railroad timetables by comparison. General Lew Wallace's heroic tale of Ben-Hur. Next week you'll thrill again to the chariot race, the scenes in the Roman galleys, and the religious inspiration of Judah Ben-Hur. We hope you'll be listening.
Join us again next Tuesday at this same time when the Dayton Power and Light Company brings you another favorite story. Good night.
This is WHIO Dayton.